Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem. Today's Daf is Yuma Samach Zayin. We begin at the Mishnah, which is at the bottom of Samach Vav Amud Beis. It says the Mishnah Meyakire Yerushalayim. Some of the prominent individuals of Yerushalayim, Hayu Melavan Oisai, they would walk. This fellow, they would escort this individual who was taking the Sur HaMishtalech out of the Midbar. They would walk him from Yerushalayim at Sukkah Rishayna until he got to the first booth, which was situated along the way. In fact, Eser Sukkahs Mi Yerushalayim Vatzuk, there were 10 of these booths erected on this route between Yerushalayim and the Tzuk. Tzuk was the tall, steep cliff off which he would throw the Sur LaZazel. Let's go over to Rashi, two lines from the bottom. Meirakira Yerushalayim, Mechashuva Yerushalayim. They would walk him from Yerushalayim. Ad Sukkah Rishayna. Sukkos also Leibaderech. They erected these huts along the route. Ubnei Adam Hoyuchen, Logar Sham Lufnei Mekipurim. These huts were staffed by people who had already positioned themselves inside these booths before Yom Tov arrived, from before Yom Kippur. They would remain there so that they can accompany this individual and walk him along the route on Yom Kippur. Shemalav and Oysay Mesukah L'Sukah. Continues the Mishnah. Tishim Ris. There was a total of 90 Ris. Ris is a distance, a measurement of distance between Yerushalayim and the final destination, that cliff. 90 Ris. Shiva Umechtel Chol Mil. 7.5 of which comprise a mil. A mil is 2,000 amot chon Shabbos. Apparently, ris was a commonly used measure, and therefore, the Mishnah refers to it. It was a total of 90 ris, 7.5 per mil. So, in 90, you will have 12 mil, 12 times tuchum Shabbos. Al kol sukkah v'sukkah oimrin loy hari mazin v'arimayim. In every sukkah which he would approach, they would turn to him and they would say, "Well, if you like some food, some drink," to lower his level of anxiety. He didn't actually need it, as the Gemara will tell us. But the offer was enough to calm his anxiety and to lessen his need for food and drink. Umalavan oisay mesuk l'sukkah. The inhabitants of the huts would walk him over to the next sukkah. And then they would come back, and the staff living in the next sukkah would pick it up from there and walk him to the next sukkah, and so on and so forth, all the way to the last sukkah. So there were a total of 10 sukkahs between Yerushalayim and the tzuk. So he would be walked along his route, except the last leg of his journey, which he did on his own. Chutz mi'achron shebhem, except for the last one of those booths. Over there, the inhabitants of that booth would only accompany him part way. She'ina magiyim el tzuk. He wouldn't actually walk him all the way to the tzuk. He would only walk him 1 mil and stop right there and watch him from a distance while the fellow would proceed and complete the final leg, the last mil, get him to the tzuk, and over there he would proceed with what he had to do, and he was watched. He was observed by this fellow who was standing at a distance. Elo oimid mirachik. The fellow who had walked him from that last sukkah would stop, watch him from a distance, v'roye es masem, watch as he proceeded with the process of taking care of the sur, throwing him off the cliff. Let's go over to Rashi on top. Tishim ris, hayu mirushalayim ba'la tzuk. Between Yerushalayim and the tzuk was a distance of 90 ris. What is a tzuk? Har gavoya v'zokav, is tall, steep, sharp cliff. Kedamrinim b'metzia, also l'roshay tzukav v'nafal, this animal climbed up to the top of the cliff and fell down. Shiva mechtel ris l'chol mil. 7.5 ris comprise a mil. Hari l'tishim ris, you'd base mil. So in 90 ris, you have a total of 12 mil. V'heim yud alef ma'asois, which comprised 11 sections, 11 segments, 11 legs of this trip, explains Rashi. From Yerushalayim to the first booth, you had the first segment, which was actually 1 mil. Umi sukkah l'sukkah ad yud sukkah is tes masois. From sukkah number 1 to number 2, you have another one. To number 3, you have another one. So between sukkah 1 and 10, you have a total of 9 legs. Added to the first leg, between Yerushalayim and the first sukkah, hare yud masois, for a total of 10 legs, 10 segments, each one being 1 mil, which is actually Tchum Shabbos. They couldn't go past the mill. They couldn't take him past the mill. That was the maximum that one could walk on Shabbos, 2,000 am. So the Yekid Yishalayim walked him to the first sukkah. That was their maximum. They went back home. He was picked up by the staff of the first sukkah, who took him to the next sukkah, which was a mill away. And then they went back to the first sukkah. Then the fellows in the second sukkah picked it up and walked him over to the third sukkah. All the way till number 10. Umi sukkah achrena letzuk masa echot. And the last section was from the sukkah to the cliff. Hare l'chol maso maso mil. It turns out that every section was a mil. Chutz me'echot mem, except for the last one, which was more. Sheish bei beiz mil, which was 2 mil. Right? We have 90 ris, 12 mil. From Yerushalayim to sukkah number 1, was the first mil. Over to 2 was the second mil. Over to all the way to 10 gives you 10 mil. And then from sukkah number 10 to the tzuk was another 2 mil. Now the fellow living in sukkah number 10 could not take him that far. That explains the Mishnah. Hainu diktoni umalavan oisei mesuk l'sukkah. The fellows who staffed the booths would walk him from one sukkah to the other. Shamil hutchum Shabbos. Because the distance between sukkah and sukkah was a mil, which corresponds to Tum Shabbos. Except chutz me'achrin, except for the last leg, shu rochek beiz mil, where the last sukkah was 2 mil away from the cliff. He couldn't take him all the way to the end. Umelaveyu mil. He would walk him a mil. V'omid merochek, and stand at a distance for Reyes Masav, and observe what he was doing with the sawyer. Now the shaila is, why didn't they make another sukkah so they could keep him company as he's engaged in the sir? I saw a nice pshat that his yonder brings. The sukkah is meant to be la'azazel, midbar, the Gemara Amud Beis will tell us. It's meant to be uninhabited, desolate, abandoned. It couldn't be staffed by people. So he had to stand there himself and take care of the sir. And the most they can do is watch him from a distance. Continues the Mishnah. Okay, so what were they watching? What was he doing? Ma hoya oise? Chaylik loshin shel zaharis. He would take the red ribbon, chetzei kosher b'sela, half of which he would tie on the rock on top of the mountain next to him, v'chetzei kosher ben karnav, the other half. He would tie between the horns of the goat, v'dach v'lachorev, and push him from behind, v'mizgalgul the yurt, and he would roll down the mountain, v'loy hoya magia l'chatzi ar. Before he would even reach halfway down the mountain, he would turn into limbs, he would break apart. When he was done the mitzvah, so he came back, and he went into the last sukkah number 10, until nightfall, until Matzah Yom Kippur. Now, why was he allowed to come back? Leaving the tchum on the way to the tzuk, that was allowed, that was the mitzvah. So you can walk all the way out to the midbar, past the tchum, but once you're out of the tchum, you're not meant to actually leave your dalad amos. So Rashi explains, he was scared, he was hungry, he was tired, he was weak. Chacham was concerned about his well-being, and perhaps you can add that, you know, we find many times Chacham were matir soifei mishum tchilasei. They allowed you to do something because they were concerned that you wouldn't find any candidates for the job. They'd make it too difficult. So in any case, this was a special allowance. They allowed him to come back to the sukkah achroina, wait it out until nightfall. The pasuk says that the fellow who was mishaleach, the sir, who take the sir out, lazazel, he becomes tamei, and that tumah extends over to his begadim as well. Says the Mishnah, from one point onward will he become tamei? Mishayetze chutz l'chomes Yerushalayim, as soon as he leaves Yerushalayim. Rabbi Shimon Oimer Mishas Dechiyosu Letzuk. No, no, no. You have to wait until he gets to the cliff and he actually pushes the goat off. That is called Mishaleach. As I saw, that's the point of Mishaleach. And that's when Tumas Begadim begins. So according to Tanakama, as soon as he leaves Yerushalayim, he's already on his way out to the Midbar. That's considered Mishaleach. According to Rabbi Shimon, until he actually pushes the goat off the cliff, the Gemara will present the Mekoyres for this Machlekes. Tanu Rabbanon, Eser Sukkos, Ushneim Asar Milin Hayu. Divir Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir, who is the town of Al Mishnah, holds that there was a distance of 12 mil between Yerushalayim and the cliff. And along the way, we had 10 of those booths situated, set up for his convenience, to allow for accompaniment. That's Rabbi Meir's sheet. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Teisha Sukkos V'Asara Milin. There was only a total of 10 mil between Yerushalayim and the Tzuk, throughout which there were 9 Sukkos, in which case he had company at the Tzuk, right? Because it wasn't out of balance. The Yerushalayim, Yekir Yerushalayim would walk him to the first Sukkah. The people of the first Sukkah walk him to the next Sukkah. All the way till Sukkah number 10. Sukkah number 9. And the people of Sukkah number 9 would walk him 1 mil, which is his destination, which is the point of Asara Milin. So he would actually have company. If he doesn't hold the svar, he has to stand himself. Rabbi Yossi Eimer, he didn't need 10 Sukkahs, he didn't need 9 Sukkahs. Rabbi Yossi Eimer, 5 Sukkahs. V'Asara Milin Halyu. The distance was a total of 10 mil, throughout which they had 5 sukkahs dispersed to allow for accompaniment, to allow for escorting. Now, how was that? How can 5 sukkahs cover this large area of 10 mil without leaving the Tchum Shabbos? Very simple. The Kulon Aidei Erev. They accomplished it through an Erev. They set up an Erev Tchum, some bread out in the distance, which allowed them to walk to that location, and beyond that another mill. This allowed the inhabitants of these booths to walk beyond a mill, in which case they can cover all this ground with just 5 sukkahs. Amar Rabbi Yosi, so Rabbi Yosi who presented this shita, said, "Sochli Elazar bni, my son Elazar challenged me. Imay the Erev, if you're going to employ an Erev method, then why 5 sukkahs? You can manage with even less, even 2 can suffice for the entire distance. Yechoni lasus afilushte sukkahs v'asora milin. I could have this arrangement taken care of with only 2 sukkahs, which will cover 10 mil." Explains Rashi, very simple. You have the people of Yerushalayim walking 2 mil. They place an Erev at a distance of 1 mil from Yerushalayim, which allows them to walk to the Erev plus another mil. The Erev is like their home now, which allows them to walk another mil. So it's a total of 2. Then the people living in the first Sukkah can also make an Erev towards Yerushalayim. So they place the Erev a mil away, which allows them to walk another mil. So they can walk a total of 2 mil towards Yerushalayim. So the first sukkah, which was 4 mil from Yerushalayim, would adequately cover that 4 mil stretch. So the Yerushalayim people would walk them 2 mil and would be greeted by the staff of that first sukkah who walked towards them 2 mil. So they cover the first 4 mil. The same thing happens during the next 4 mil. Some other people of this first sukkah would position their Erev Tchumen going in the direction of the Midbar. So 1 mil out, which allows them to walk another mil beyond that. So they could walk 2 mil towards the second sukkah. The people living in the second sukkah could do the same towards the first sukkah, which allows them to walk 2 mil towards the first sukkah. So that covers a distance of 4 mil. And then the people, so we're holding at 8. Some of the staff members of the second sukkah will make their Erev going towards the Midbar. That allows them to walk 2 more mil, all the way to the cliff, which was at point 10. So you have 4 mil between Yerushalayim and Sukkah number 1, 4 mil between Sukkah number 1 and Sukkah number 2, and the final 2 mil, which they walked using an Erev. So why have more than two Sukkahs? That was the challenge question that my son, Elazar, asked me. So why did they do it? Tosafot Rashi says it was rather inconvenient to have to time themselves perfectly. You have to stand out there and greet them just in time. Otherwise, it was hot. Midbar there. It was kind of inconvenient to have to time things and synchronize things so perfectly. Therefore, they preferred making many more sukkahs, 9 or 10, to make it easy and convenient. Continues the Gemara, Keman Ozlo Hadasanya. In accordance with whose shita was the following statement presented? This is actually the ending of the Braisa that we're learning now. The Braisa concludes that this fellow taking this soir was escorted throughout his trip, chutz mi achron shebehen, except for the staff living in the last sukkah, shelo yigia imo letzuk, which wouldn't arrive with him to the tzuk, elo imid merochak, rather he would have to stand from a distance, v'ro yes masav, and watch his doing. Whose shita is this? Kaman k'Rabbi Meir. So although it's actually presented after Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, but it's referring back to Rabbi Meir. He's the only one who held that these sukkahs came up short. And he was the one who held that there was a distance of 12 mil between Yerushalayim and the tzuk, and only 10 sukkahs, in which case the last leg he would have to do himself. So this is following Shita Shemeir, which is actually also the Tana of our Mishnah. So in summary, we have three Shitas, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yossi. According to Rabbi Yossi, there was an heir of Tuchumen employed, not so according to Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, distance was a total of 10 mil, not so according to Rabbi Meir, who held that it was a distance of 12 mil. And Rabbi Meir is the only one that held that the fellow would stand out there on his own while taking care of the Sohar Mishtalech. Al kol sukkah v'sukkah oimrim loy hari mazin v'hari mayim. Every time he visited a booth, they would offer him food and drink. Tana, we learned in the Braisa, in fact, it never happened that he should take advantage of this offer. Ella, so why then would they offer it to him? You can't compare one who has bread in his basket, who has access to food, to a person who does not have access. This lowers his level of anxiety and eliminates the need to have to go ahead and accept the offer. But they offered it to him, and in fact, the Tosafot Shanim says, if it turns out that he was masukan, he was in danger, he needed to accept the offer. Of course, it was mutter to do so on Yom Kippur. So what was he doing out there at the cliff? He would take the Lashon Shel Zohar, the red ribbon, split into two, half of which he would tie on the rock, which was right in front of him, and the other half he would tie on the goat on his way down the cliff. Why don't you just tie the entire thing on the rock? Given the mitzvah b'soir. Since there's a mitzvah to actually throw the goat off the mountain, we're concerned that he might not get to it. Why? Dilma kadmo malbim. Perhaps as he's engaged with tying the ribbon on the rock, suddenly the ribbon might turn white. And this would happen sometimes because it was already the time of the mitzvah. Perhaps Hashem would just whiten the ribbon. Umayas v'date, at which point he would be at ease. He would suddenly see this thing turn white. So he would gladden his heart and he would feel accomplished. He would forget about tossing the goat off the mountain. So you don't want him to do that. You want to split the ribbon into two, half of which he would tie on that rock. But then he would proceed to the goat and tie half on the goat. And as the Tosafot Shanim points out, the ribbon would not whiten, says Rashi, wouldn't whiten until he was finished the entire procedure. And while he's engaged with the goat, of course, he wouldn't forget about it. He would just continue and toss him off the mountain. Says him, if that's the case, then skip the rock. V'niktri kule ben karnav. Why wouldn't he tie the entire ribbon around the horns of the goat? Zimnin de gamash le l'reshe. There's a concern there as well. Perhaps, while he's being tossed down the mountain, he might go ahead and bend. His head might get bent underneath his body. Gamash le l'reshe. V'lava d'atei, in which case the fellow would no longer notice. He would notice that ribbon, because it would be hidden underneath the animal. And he wouldn't see it get white, and he would have chalishas hadas. It would bother him that he couldn't see that he had a successful trip and a successful procedure done. He would want to see it get white, and the chachamim appreciated that concern of his. Therefore, they said, "Look, do half and half, half on the rock, half on the goat. Make sure you throw the goat off the mountain, and when it whitens, you will see it at least on the rock next to you." Initially, the ribbon wouldn't go along to the Lazazel. Actually, it remained back in the Beis HaMikdash. They would actually tie it up, hang it up on the Pesach Ulam Bachutz, on the outside of the entranceway to the Ulam, on the way to the Heichal, and they would keep an eye on the thread. Hilben Hayusmeich. Apparently, this was after the time of Shimon HaTzadik, when at times it would whiten, at times not. So if they saw a hilben, it got white, they were happy. But if it didn't get white, perhaps somebody amongst Yisrael didn't do proper tshuva, or perhaps the tshuva wasn't a full and complete tshuva, it wouldn't whiten, they would be upset, they would be sad. They would be ashamed and embarrassed. As a result, they were masakin to tie the ribbon on the inside of the ulam so it wouldn't be visible to all. Still, there were people who were curious and would peek inside and take a look. They noticed it white. They would be happy. If they didn't notice it turn white, they would be sad. As a result, they decided no more. They're going to send it out to the midbar, half of which will be tied on the rock, half on the horns. This way, it wouldn't be a public spectacle. Amar Rabbi Nachum bar Papa Mishum Blazer Akapar. He had a different version of events. Initially, they would tie it on the inside of the ulam. As soon as the soy reached the midbar, it would turn white. The Yodush Nasis Mitzvasai, which told them that the mitzvah of the soy was in Skyim. And Tesh Hashem says, well, sometimes it would get white even before it would be thrown off the cliff. But it means to say, Samach Lasiyasai, it's time of Kima mitzvah of the soy. In any case, your kapara is done, or just about to be done. Shenemar, what do we find? That a whitening red ribbon is a siman of kapara. Shenemar, yuchat eicham kashanim. Even if your aveiros will be red, like a red ribbon, kashal galbino, it will whiten like white snow. Lo yo emagia lachamachtze zahar. Before he would even reach halfway down the mountain, he would turn into evar. Iboilu, the bnei yeshiva asked a shaila. Oisin evarim main ba'no. What is the halacha of those evarim? Can one have hanah from it or not? Rav Shmuel is machlekes. Chad amar mutar. One maintains the evarim of the soy mishtalech mutar b'hanah. V'chad amar asur. The other one maintains that they're asur. Mada amar mutar. The one that holds that it's mutar. Tichsib b'midbar. Because the pasuk says v'shilach as asur b'midbar, which is an extra pasuk to tell you that it's a hefker. It's hefker like a midbar, free to be used. There's no isur hana. Umad amar asurin. Techsiv gzera. The other one says, well, the pasuk says eretz gzera. And Rashi says lashon chomer ve'isur, like a decree, like a gzera, to tell you that there's an isur hana. Others explain gzera is lashon cut off, separated from use. You can't partake in it. Umad amar asurin. Now the shita that says that it's asur because of gzera. Hi midbar my avodli. What does he do with the extra word ba midbar? Miboilik the sanya. He needs it for the falun kaloch. The brisa brings three times. We find a mention of the word midbar. Hamidbara, hamidbara, ba midbar. What's the point of mentioning it three times? L'rabbeis navi givayin, shiloi ubeis elamim. Coming to tell you, wherever the Shechina, wherever the Mishkan was situated, navi givayin, or in Shiloi, or in the Beis HaMikdash, Beis HaLomim, you do this procedure, you send away the Sar Mishtalech to the Midbar. We know that from the three mentionings of Bamidbar. Hamidbar, Hamidbar, Bamidbar. V'idoch ha'gzera ma'avid le'i. The Shita, who holds that the Eivor of the Sar Mishtalech is Mutter, because of Bamidbar, what does he do with the Pasuk Gzera? When he boils the sun, he applies it for the following price. Pasuk says gzeira. We learn in gzeira elachatucha, a mountain which is sharp, cut, steep, a cliff. Davar acher, another pshat, in gzeira elachdavar mizgazav yerid. Gzeira is referring to the animal tearing apart, breaking apart on his way down. So you meant to throw him off that cliff. Davar acher gzeira, another pshat in gzeira. Shema Toimer Maaseh Toyuhu. Hashem is speaking. Perhaps a person can think, well, this procedure doesn't seem to have much significance, much meaning. Take a goat, throw him off the cliff. What good is that going to do to me? Talmud Loimer Ani Hashem. The pasuk near that parsha says Ani Hashem, which tells you there's meaning here. Don't worry, it's in good hands. Ani Hashem Gezartiv. I declared it. I decreed it. Ve'enecho Rishus Laharben. You have no ability, no permission to challenge. It's pointless. It's beyond your comprehension. There is true meaning, very deep meaning, to this procedure. Amar Rava, we have this machlekes, whether the Eivorim of the Sar Mishtalech is mutar or asur. I maintain, says Rava, Mistavram, it's logical to say, Kimanda Amar mutarim. I follow that shita. I say it's mutar. You know why? Like Amra Toira Shlach L'Takala. It's inconceivable to say that the Torah tells you, you know what, take the goat, throw him off the mountain, and then you can have an unsuspecting fellow just walk by and inadvertently have anah from something which is asur b'hanah without knowing. It's mistaver that when the Torah says, throw it away, it's not going to bring takala, and it's actually mutar b'hanah. There's a similar gemara by the sur, by the bird of the mitzvah, same shaila, you send it away, is it mutar or asur? And Gemara says the same svara. It's mistavar that it's mutar. The Torah wouldn't tell you to send away an animal or a bird which is asur b'hano. Tanu Rabbanon, pasuk says azazel. Right? He is sar azazel. What does that mean? Shehei az v'kasha. This mountain which we're going to use is az. It's az. It's kasha. Az is a tough, hard, rocky, difficult terrain. And ale, Aleph Lamed, also denotes mightiness and strength and hard. So it's going to be a rocky terrain, rocky mountain. Yochel b'yishuv, perhaps it can be even in an inhabited area. Tamloim b'midbar, has to be out in the desert. U'menayin shebetzuk, how do we know it's going to be a tall, steep cliff? Tamloimar gezera. Gezerah is the lashon of chatucha, says Rashi. Cut. A steep, sharp cliff. Tani idach, we have another braisa, azazel, tells you, kasha shebaharim, difficult, hard, rocky terrain, hard mountain. V'chendu oimer, we find that the lashon eil denotes mightiness. That's eili ha'aretz, lokach, the king of Babel came to Eretz Yisrael and took the mighty of the land. So, azazel is a joint word, as the Marshal explains. It's as though we move the Aleph over to the Lamed and we have Azaz, Izuz. We have in the Shir, in Az Yashir, we have Azi, Azi Vizimurka Oz, my strength. So Azaz is a lotion of strength, of rocky, hard, difficult terrain, and Ale also denotes Kasha, mightiness. It's going to be a rocky, choppy, cliffy mountain. Tanod v'Rabishmol, another pshat, Azazel is telling you that the Sir Azazel is going to be mechaper on Gili Arayis. She mechaper al Masa, it's mechaper on Gili Arayis, which was something that took place in the time of Uzzah v'Azoil. Now listen to Rashi here. Rashi here is 14 lines from the top. He says like this, Uzeva Zoil a Malachi Chabala, Malachim. Bad Malachim came down from Shemayim. Sheyordu la'aretz mei Na'ama achayis tuval kaim. They came down at the time of Na'ama achayis tuval kaim, before the Mabul. Valeim Nemar vayiru b'nei Elohim es b'nei se'odam. So they engaged in inappropriate behavior with human beings. Kolayim ala reis mechaper. So that's what Gemara is referring to. Uzeva Zoil, these Malachim engaged in these things. And the Sarla Zazel will address Gilei Royus, that the Averis which are present in today's generation. Tan Rabbanon, says the Gemara, the Pasuk reads like this. Es Mishpotai Tasu, I'll just finish the entire Pasuk. Es Mishpotai Tasu, Ves Chekoisai Tishmru, Lo Lechas Behem Ani Hashem Lekech. So we darshan as follows. Es Mishpotai Tasu, Mishpotam are things which are logical. Dvarim shel molay nichtavu, things which are, even if they would have been remained unwritten, they would not have been presented as halachas in the Torah. Dinu shi kasvu, it's logical, it makes sense to write these things which are necessary for proper running of society. Right? Well, how long exist of things which are rational things, rational mitzvahs, the mishpatim, avodas kechavim, the belief in Hashem, or thinking that the world came by accident is utter folly. So avodas kechavim is something which is a mishpat, something rational. Vigili arayis, apparently, at least in those days, it was something which was given to reason, especially eshes ish. So these are averis which are seichel, which are logical, shvichas damim, gezel, stealing, brichas Hashem, cursing Hashem. So these things are mishpatim. The pasuk continues, es chukoisai tishmeru. What are chukim? Laws, decrees. Things which aren't necessarily comprehensible. Dvarim shasotad meishav aleim. These are things which are satan, which is really also the Eitzahara. He uses these things to challenge us. Let's go over to Rashi, 4 or 5 lines up. Hasatan, says Rashi, Yetzer Hara. Meshvalein Tshuva. He uses these as a way to challenge. Lahatay says Yisro. To make life difficult for us. Leimar Shatoyen Emes. Look, Turim. Look, does it make sense? Kimata Elis Bachalelu. What's the purpose of all these procedures? Lachach Nemar Bohen Choik. Ani Hashem Gozati Alech. That's what the Pasuk continues, that these things are Choik. Don't worry, it's beyond your comprehension. I decree them, I look after them. These things make much sense. So what are included on this list of chukim? Ve'elohen, says the Gemara. Achilas chazir, levishas shatneis, v'chalitzas yevam, v'taharas mitzor, the procedure at mitzor goes through shavim, etc. Take the birds, v'sor mishtaleach. I take a pair of goats, one is a carven, one is out to the midbar. How does this work? And elsewhere the chazal bring paraduma on the list. So a person might think, well, my question, the validity and the rationale behind these things, these things don't seem to have much meaning and purpose, which tells you, Ani Hashem chakaktiv, I Hashem, established these chukim, once again, there's no point in challenging, these things are beyond your comprehension. Continues the Gemara, Emosai metamei b'gadim. The mission included with this halacha that the fellow who escorts the soyer la'azazel, he becomes tamei, and the tumah extends over to his begadim as well. From what point onward does this tumah take effect? Tan rabban hamashaleach mitamei begadim. Only the one escorting the soyer has this tumas begadim ve'en hashaleach as hamashaleach mitamei begadim. But this doesn't apply to the fellow walking along with the mashaleach, such as the Yakir Yerushalayim, or the fellows staffing those sukkahs, or the Kohen Gadol, who actually sent out this fellow with a goat. Doesn't apply to them. Now, when does this commence? Yochel Mishayetze Chutz L'Chayim Etz Azara. Perhaps the tumah gets activated as soon as he leaves the Azara. He's already on his way out. No, Hamishaleach. Says Rashi, Mashma Sheshulchay Kvar L'Tzad HaMidbar. He used to be on his way out to the Midbar, when he's still in the area, still in Yerushalayim, That's not called Meshaleach. Oh, he a Meshaleach. If so, Yochel at Shegil Tzuk. It's only activated when he reaches his final destination, the Tzuk, the cliff. Talmud Lomar, Veha Meshaleach. Which means, while he's engaged in Mimeshaleach, even before reaching his destination. Haketzad, how do we work this out? Mishayetze Chutz Tachemetz Yerushalayim Div Rabbi Yehuda. What Rabbi Yehuda? It's referring to something in the middle. As soon as he leaves Yerushalayim, in which case he's already approaching the outskirts of the uninhabited area, the Midbar, that's called Meshaleach, and Tumas Begadim begins then. Rabbi Yossi Omer, the Pasuk says, about Meshaleach Es Hasor La'Azazel, right, Yichabes Begadim. We learn from there that Azazel V'Chibas, the din of Kibus Begadim, rinsing his clothing, Mimatar's clothing, meaning, the tumah gets activated at the point of Azazel, Ad Shehigia Latzuk. When he reaches the cliff, that's the point of tumah. Rabbi Shimon Omer, no. You have to do the shiluach off the cliff. V'mashalech es ha-soyer la'azazel yichabes begadav. We learn from here that until he actually pushes the goat off the cliff, he's mashalech the soyer off the cliff. There is no tumah yet. Zorkei bevasreish. He gives him a sudden push, umetame begadim, at which point he's metame begadim. So we know the fellow will have tumas begadim. When does it get activated? According to Rabbi Yehuda, when he leaves Yerushalayim, he's already entering the midbar domain. Rabbi Yossi holds, he has to reach his destination. Rabbi Shimon holds, when he pushes him off the cliff. Boloy etzel parvis soyer nisraf. So now, once the Kohen Gadol sent him off to the midbar, he's ready to resume his avoid in the Beis Hamikdash. He comes back to his par Kohen Gadol, his soyer l'Hashem, who already nishchat, whose dam was already brought into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Heichal Mizbeach, and they are slated for Sreifa. They're going to be burnt outside Yerushalayim. Before he does that, Koron, he tears them apart, V'hoitzias Emurein, takes out the Chalovim. In fact, the word Emurin is, according to the Ram Pirsha Mishnah, is based on the word Amur. These were spoken about. These were mentioned in the Psukim as Hashem's part of the carbon, the chalavim. They go on the Mizbeach. That's what they called Emurin. So he takes out the chalavim, the Emurin, the son of a Magus, he places them in a bucket, Viktirin, Agam Mizbeach, and puts them on the Mizbeach. Goes over to the actual animal itself, Kulon, B'makloys, or B'makloys. He sort of twists and braids them onto poles. The way Rashi explains, it's two poles side by side, on which he would position the par and the sur on top of it. So they would be braided, one on top of the other, and hung onto the poles, which were carried by four people, two in the front, two in the back. V'yitzi'un beis ha-sreifa, and they took him out to the beis ha-sreifa, which was outside Yerushalayim. And here as well, there's a din of tumas begadim. Pasuk says the Soyrif of the Parvis Soyr will be Matame Begadim, he becomes Tame, and so do his clothing. At what point does this Tumah kick in? Soon as they leave the Chaim of the Azor, let's consider the beginning of the Sreifa process, they're on the way out, there's Tumas Begadim. That's the Tanakama. Shimon Omer, Mishayatsis Ha'ur Beruban. It only takes place at a later point, when most of the animals have caught fire. Mishiyatze se'ur, when the fire has caught on, berubon, on most of the animal, that's already called the time of Sreifa, and that's when the Tumas Begadim kicks in. So we learn about the Kohen Gadol taking out the Emurim, putting them in a bucket, tying up the animals on these poles, and on the way out, they are metame begadim. According to Tanakam, as soon as they leave the Azor, according to Reb Shimon, only once fire has caught on to most of the animal. The Mishnah says that the Kohen Gadol takes the Emurim, places them in a magus, and then v'yiktirim. Agam Mizbeach, he burns them on the Mizbeach. Says the Gemara, v'yiktirim sakadaitach. Can you think that it means literally He's Magdur at this point? It's not time yet. He has a lot to do before he's Magdur the Imurim. He has to switch into the Big Day Zav and get involved in the Musafin, as we're going to see later. Ela'ema rather interpret as follows. Le'aktirun al-gabi mizbeach. He places them in a bucket in preparation for future aktor on the mizbeach. Kolon ma'kleis. Amar Rabbi Yechon kemin kliya, sort of a braid. Tana we learned in a brisa. So the parvisor would be transported intact, uncut, out to the makam of Sreifa. Now, when they arrived at the makam Sreifa, they would actually chop it up, but they would leave the flesh inside the skin intact. It wouldn't flay. It wouldn't skin the animal. They wouldn't cut it apart like the oila was cut apart, because then it was flayed, it was skinned, and then cut into pieces. Here, it was different. Ela oir al-gabi basar, the skin remained on the flesh. How do we know that it was so? That it was different than the oila. The son, Rabbi Omer Nema Kan, oir u-basar perish. Here, by the parvisor, we find the pasuk referring to the oir, basar perish, skin, flesh, and the waste inside the animal. So transported as one to the Beis Hadeshen for Sreifa. V'nemar lahalam, we find likewise later on by Par Koin Mashiach, which underwent a similar process, we find Oir u'basar u'perish. Again, reference to the three elements of the animal. We make a hekesh connection. Mal lahalam deyin tuach v'loy dehefshik. Just as over there by Par Koin Mashiach, the process involved nituach, chopping it up, but without hefshit, without skinning the animal. Afkan, likewise over here, Yom Kippur. Adi nituach, well, the hefshit. Sure, was chopped into pieces, but the skin remained intact. It was not flayed, it was not skinned at all. Vasa minolan, and in fact, how do we know that Par Koin Mashiach underwent this process? The Sanya, we have a brisa. The pasuk by Par Koin Mashiach reads like this. I just read the entire pasuk. Rashi brings down the second line. Ves oira par, ves kol besoroi. So you have skin, you have flesh. Al roishe val krav. Its head, its legs. Vikirbo yupirsha in innards and its waist. Vahoitzi. Let's go back to the Gemara. The sani of vikirbo yupirsha vahoitzi. Melamit shemotzi yisholem. This tells us they transport him outside of Yerushalayim as one unit, intact, uncut. Yochel Yisrafenu Shalom, perhaps this will indicate that you also burn him in that manner, uncut. Nemar kan roishay krav. We can't do that because over here in the pasuk we have a reference to roishay and krav. V'nemar lahalon, and likewise over there by the oila we have roishay ukrav. We make this connection to Gzeir Shava. Ma lahalon adit nituach, just as the oila will be cut first. Pasuk clearly says that the oil is meant to be skinned and cut. Afkan al dinetuach here as well by the par, koyin moshiach, which of course is the carbon which a koyin gadol would bring throughout the year if he committed an avera. Here as well we say al dinetuach needs to be some cutting done. Ima lahalan al de hefshit. If we're going to compare it to oil, perhaps we'll go all the way, just as over there. You first skin it and then cut it. Afkan al de hefshit here as well by the par, koyin moshiach. He's going to skin it as well. Talmud Loimar Rekirbo Yupirsha. The pasuk contains a reference to Kirbo and Pirsha, which sounds like it's one package. It doesn't say Al Kirbo, but Al Pirsha, his innards and his waist. The Kirbo Pirsha is one unit. My Talmud, what do you see from there? Omra Papa, Kashem Shek Pirsha Bekirbo. Just as the waist of the animal remains inside. The Gemara assumes as such, it's not their cheres to take out the waste and display it in public. Likewise, the Oiran Basar mentioned in that pasuk is meant to remain intact, flesh inside its skin, meaning it's left as is, unskinned. So although on the one hand we compare it to an oila where nituach will take place, before Sreifa you're going to cut apart the Par Koyen Mashiach, but you stop there. You don't actually flay it, you don't remove the skin. So once we know that procedure applies to Parakot Mashiach, on the one hand you take it out intact, you're Moitzi Shalim. When you get to the Makam Sreifa, you go ahead and you cut it, but you leave it intact. Flesh inside skin here as well, by par and Sar Yom Kippur, which are connected to Pakim Mashiach. We also apply the same process. We are mitzi the animals intact, whole, as the Mishnah tells us. You just braid it on the, tie it up on the poles. So you take it out as one unit intact. But once you arrive at the Mokam Sreifa, you do need tuach, but you leave the basar inside the oir. There's no skinning. Okay, let's review some of the main points that we learned today. We learned about the sukkos, which were positioned along the route. We had three shittos. According to Reb Meir, there was a distance of 12 mil, which had 10 sukkos, which would require the fellow to stand on his own, and the staff coming from the 10th sukkah would have to stand at a distance at the Tchum Shabbos and watch him from there. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it was a total of 10 mil, and only 9 sukkahs were needed to keep him company, to walk him all the way to his destination. According to Rabbi Yossi, it was 10 mil, but only 5 sukkahs were needed because they used an Erev to stretch the distance. They would offer him Mayim Mazon, which of course he never accepted. They would send the Lashon Shel Zahiris out to the Midbar with him, half of which was tied on the rock, half on the goat. But a machlek is whether the Ivarim of the Sar Mishtalech HaMutar Bano Asar, the one that says Mutar learns from the word Bamidbar, it's Hefker like a Midbar. The one that says Asar, Gzeira tells you, Chomer Ve'Isser, can't have partaken it. We learned about the different types of mitzvahs. We have Mishpatim, which are logical. We have Chukim, which are beyond comprehension. One of which is the Sar Lazazel. We learned about Tumas Begadim, experienced by this fellow who was taking the Sawyer. One Shita says, as soon as he left the Yerushalayim. One Shita says, only when he arrived at the Tzuk. Rav Shimon says, V'mashalech es hazor Sar Lazazel means the actual Maisa of pushing him off the cliff, at which point Tumas Begadim begins. He went over to the Pirate Sar and Israfen, took out the Chilovim, put it into a Muggis in preparation for Akhtorah. He braided the actual animals onto these poles, which were then transported outside Yerushalayim. They were taken out intact, and then as soon as he arrived at the Mokum Strefa, he would chop them up, but of course they would remain flesh and skin. Hatzlacha Rabbah to you.